You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. I got thinking a few weeks ago, and I said, geez, I'm approaching my 70th birthday. I know that sometimes can be a scary thought. But what I realized and I didn't have anything to think about back then is that we've put age brackets, we've put groups of Americans into categories. Those of us born, my age anyway, are known as boomers. And then there's millennials and Generation Y and X and everything else that comes under the sun. But specifically millennials, those people today are between the ages of 30 and 45. They are a big segment of the American population. But what do we know about them? What is it that they stand for? What is it that they may become our next leaders? In fact, they will be our next leaders. There's a lot to learn about the millennials. So I was able to come across a terrific book, What Happened to Millennials in Defense of a Generation? And my guest this week is author and journalist Charlie Wells. He is the author of What Happened to Millennials. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Charlie about that exact question. Charlie, nice to have you with us.
Al, thank you so much for having me on. Great to be here.
Did I get that correct, first of all? Because I'm the first guy, I'll be the first to admit that I make more mistakes than not. But millennials age bracket, 30 to 45, that's basically
Al, you got that right. So basically people kind of born between the years of 1981 and 1996. And I got to say, it's a little bit more of an art than a science here, right? Because some of these labels, I think, they're a little bit more about kind of how people feel, how they act, kind of how they think. And so it's not always, exactly from every kind of research institute those years. But that's pretty much it. Kind of early 80s to the mid 90s when people were born.
What is it about what happened? First of all, the title of the book is kind of unique. It, what happened to millennials, as if they didn't exist anymore, or they fell off the planet. They're still here. They're still a big segment of the American population. But did something, what happened to them as a group? Do they no longer have a voice? Is there something about their style of living? What captivated you to write the book?
Yeah, so I think thinking about the title, something that has been unique about millennials is there's been a lot of different stories about us. And I think, Al, you were making this really interesting point that, before, in decades past, we didn't really have names for generations, but we've really kind of started naming them. We've kind of been putting people into categories. And I think, we've got the baby boomers. And I think what's interesting about millennials is when we were young, there was a story and there was research or a lot of books written about how we were going to be this really optimistic group of people. We were going to be kind of like, the silent generation, the greatest generation that would kind of really lift up the United States. That kind of changed over time. And the story that people told about us got a lot more negative. And if you think about millennials, kind of around 2015, 2016, there was this story that we were slackers, that we were behind, that we were not growing up, that we were spending all of our money on avocado toast. This is real, and I'm sure people have heard this one. And I call it in my book the avocado toast thesis about millennials. And it was basically, we're going out to brunch, we were spending our money on Ubers, we were spending too much time on Facebook, we weren't buying homes. And so there was this concern that we weren't growing up. But basically, what I really try to do in this book is I take on that narrative and I say, look, that was about 10 years ago. A lot has changed in that span of time. And I want to talk more about those changes. But basically, that was kind of what propelled me, that, these old stories kind of that people have been telling about us, they've changed a lot. So kind of what happened to us as we've grown up?
And those changes, you're exactly right. The changes that take place, it has happened to every generation, past, current, and even the future generations. There are always going to be changes. There's going to be, because we see evolution. We've seen evolution in government. We've seen evolution in education, in technology. So, I mean, if that's something that has come into vogue when you're very young, it becomes part of your DNA. But more importantly, millennials today, as I said, boomers are moving on. They're retiring. I'm not going to say that they have no more input. into what takes place here in this country. But the next generation of political leaders, of business leaders, in almost any category, will indeed be millennials. Are you confident, and based on your research, that millennials will be able to dismay that, as you said earlier, that people thought of us as slackers, that this generation, the millennial generation, will indeed be able to pick up the torch, as they say, and move forward?
I do think so. And I think when you look at the data, it's just pretty clear that that old story kind of needs to change, right? And I think one of the issues here, just kind of thinking about generations, getting to your point about how kind of everyone goes through these changes. And I think something that sometimes happens when we talk about generations is we get just treating them sort of like astrological signs, right? Where it's like, okay, if you were born between the year 1981 and 1996, you must be like this, right? Or if you were born in 1975, you must be like that. And I think one of the things that we've kind of seen over time is we need to think a little bit more broadly about how people kind of change over time, right? We can't just take generation and kind of say, this is going to determine how people are going to be, right? So that is what kind of sociologists refer to as cohort, right? When you're born. And what I try to do in this book is basically say, yes, when you're born matters, but let's also look at like a lot of other things that are going on in history, right? Things that are happening to everyone else across the globe, you know, all of us kind of, as you say, across the world. But then there's this third category of life stage, and that really kind of resonated when you mentioned it to me, which is that every human, right, since the beginning of time has gone through this journey of you're born, you're a child, you become an adolescent, then you become a young adult, then you become an adult, and that's something that we all have in common. And so when you take all those things into consideration, that cohort issue, that history issue, and that life stage issue, you can get a full picture of what people are like. And to answer the question that you just asked me, you know, yes, I do think that millennials are rising to the occasion on that issue of leadership in the corporate world, in the political world. And, you know, some of the early data wasn't super optimistic about how we were in our young adulthoods, but now we're a lot older, right? We are getting into this category, this kind of dreaded category for a lot of people of middle age. And as we get there, things are looking pretty good.
And that's nothing new. And that's the part that surprises me is that, you know, people are so quick to attach a label or point fingers. I was just thinking as you were talking, I'm thinking, okay, you know, the people, my grandparents, my uncles, my aunts, my parents grew up during World War II. They had their own issues to deal with. As a boomer myself, there was the Vietnam War. Many people were up in arms about the war. There was the draft. They were against the draft. Many people didn't want to be drafted. I'm just using that as one example. So yeah, No different than what millennials are currently going through. And yet we often forget. I think sometimes our memories are short, and we forget that past generations dealt with socioeconomic issues. They dealt with war. They dealt with national issues, poverty, racial issues, no different than what millennials. And yet the millennials have kind of got a bad rap off of all of this. And as you said, somewhat unfairly. But something else that you touched upon, I think it's very interesting, is that as they get a little older, a little wiser, as they say, a little older, a little wiser. It sounds like you feel very strongly, based on your research, that they're ready to step up to the plate now and say, "Hey, okay, you know, we when we were in our 20s, we were a little carefree, but we're ready to pick up the mantle and take it from here."
And
talk
the
about
data
that.
Shows, right? Like the data shows that. And I think that that's kind of where we can kind of move from, like, you know, talking about vibes, feelings, reputation, et cetera, and then get into some of these kind of standard benchmarks that we were maybe not getting, you know, the best grades on a decade ago. But of course, you know, we were coming out of the recession. You know, there was a point in the recession when 1 out of 5 young people was unemployed. So if people who wanted to have a job in 2009, 1 out of every 5 people just couldn't find one, right? So there's a lot of economic reasons why people in the millennial generation have been kind of behind, why there are a lot of concerns about it. But then it's really interesting, right? And I think this is why we have a good story to tell, because it is one of people really kind of picking themselves up and kind of picking up the slack in a way that maybe people didn't expect. now there was this, that avocado toast thesis that really got back to home ownership. This concern, we were wasting money, not thinking about the future, not buying homes. Millennials now, a majority of us own homes. I think that surprises a lot of people because that old story about us is kind of sticking around. This is another one that I think is going to surprise people, that in early 2025, so early this year, the average net worth of millennials was actually 31% higher than boomers was at our age. Mm. So by that measure, we're doing better than baby boomers. And a lot of times there's a lot of blame cast on baby boomers that, you know, basically there's this narrative that, you know, they created this world that we're living in and it's terrible and we, you know, we're kind of suffering from it. But actually, millennials, maybe even within that context, if you take that for certain, even within that context, we've managed on average to exceed baby boomers as far as net worth, at least on average. So, you know, I think the data shows that we are doing better than I think the old story has been indicating.
And it certainly proves that data is not always accurate or fair, you know, when it's applied to various groups across the country. I want to take a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Vone, your host. My guest this week is author and journalist Charlie Wells. His new book is What Happened to Millennials in Defense of a Generation. Charlie, you know, I have to agree because in I see it in my own community. It's not boomers buying houses today, driving the economy. They want to get out of their homes and start to downsize. I'm seeing many young couples, you know, with young children, high school age children, even sometimes early college age, buying homes, starting businesses, once again keeping that cycle going. So it sounds like a dark cloud was hung over their head, but it doesn't sound like it impaired as a group. It didn't impair them to the point where they felt, you know, oh, geez, you know, society is looking down upon us. Therefore, we'll just have to live up to that image and not do anything. They sort of shrug that off, move forward. And as you said, you know, today, earlier this year, the net worth at this point in their life versus mm-hmm. boomers is much, much higher. But why is it? Is it because you know this more than anybody. You're a journalist. Is there, because today versus maybe 40, 50 years ago, there are so many new news outlets. Anybody can post anything on the internet, the World Wide Web, so that the talk about, the negative talk about millennials got out there so much faster and flooded the market as opposed to back in the 1940s, 50s, early 60s. Is that maybe part of the reason why there's been such a bad rap?
Yeah, Al, I think bingo there, right? And I want to do a thought experiment here, right? So imagine just like 1980, you go to brunch. Who else? Yeah, you know, that's when boomers were going to brunch, right? Were you going to brunch in 1980, Al?
Yeah, I'm sure somebody must have taken me. I'm right. Cheap, so I don't pay.
Right, someone took you out. Who knew? Like, who would know that you went to brunch, right? Probably not a lot of people.
Right.
But back in 2010, kind of, I'd say maybe peak brunch years for millennials, a lot of people knew, right? Because social media was starting to explode. If you fast forward even to 2014, 2015, you've got Instagram photos, you've got Facebook photos, you got, you know, if you were in 1992 and you went to a wedding, who knew you were at the wedding? Maybe the people there, but not, you know, someone that you knew in high school 15 years ago who now lives on the other side of the globe. And so that has been something kind of unique about millennials. And I think why the story about us sounds different, even if it's pretty similar actually to how it has been throughout the course of at least American history, right? It's just that people were watching us really from kind of the birth of social media to now go through that incredibly awkward phase of life, roughly, you know, from kind of 18 when you start to become an adult to your early 30s, right? That's a pretty awkward phase, I think, for any generation across time, but ours is uniquely documented. And I think that's why it kind of felt different. I think that's why this reputation about us stuck. But I think it's really important to kind of look past that. And that's really what I tried to do in this book, to kind of say, okay, why did this story about millennials, why did it kind of get amplified maybe more than it was for other people? And when you get down to it, I think that technological development has a lot to do with it.
And that's a perfect word, amplified. Again, as you're talking, I'm thinking, well, geez, in the 60s, there was the invasion of the British rock bands. There was Woodstock. There was the Vietnam War. There was racial disharmony almost weekly. You would hear about that, but it wasn't 24/7. And I think boomers escaped, as you said, having that image thrown and attached to them as a group of people, whereas millennials just happened to be coming into their own at a time when social media was on the rise and just really anywhere you went, anything you did could easily have been documented, and then it became front page news. And that's kind of...
And even before that, I think you bring up this interesting point about 24/7 news, right? So there was social media when we were kind of in that awkward young adult phase.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were growing up, when we were born, if you think about this marker, this really sticks out to me. That earlier in this program, we were talking about like what years were millennials born. And I told you, it's roughly 1981 to 1996, kind of depends on, whatever institute you're looking at. That is literally the years between CNN being founded in 1980 and Fox News being founded in 1996, right? And that just speaks to the rise of that 24/7 news cycle. So when we were children, there was this 24/7 news cycle. By the time we got to that young adult phase, there was this 24/7. Can you go more than 24/7? There's this 800 by 700 social media circles. So it was this complete change of media. And media kind of contributes to the stories that people tell about us. So I think that is, again, a reason why this narrative about millennials was so strong.
Did that hurt millennials overall? Not in terms of the image thing. When I was growing up, I remember my folks saying, you got to have a hard shell or you'll never survive in life. And I'm sure many millennials have certainly survived all that kind of criticism. But when you get down to the day-to-day living, jobs, relationships, politics, that label was hanging over this generation's head. Did it impact them in almost every way that boomers or other generations never had to deal with?
It almost felt like you had to be your own public relations person. And I remember a phase in my life when I look around social media, this is me speaking from experience, but a lot of the people that I spoke to in this book either had this feeling or did it themselves, where every important life milestone, and maybe even not important life milestone, they felt like they needed to put a picture out and have the right words to describe what was going on for everybody else to see. And I think that operating in that kind of environment where you are observed, you're putting yourself out to be examined, and you're being criticized or praised based on what that public relations person, who is you, is doing, I think that has an effect on people. And I think that's something that was entirely new, right? That was something that was coming of age as we were coming of age. And I think that's something that maybe we weren't prepared for. And so one of the things, in this book, I interviewed 5 millennials from across the United States, from very different backgrounds, very different political beliefs, very different socioeconomic backgrounds. And one of the things, one of the uniting characteristics that these people really shared with me was that when they, as they grew up, when they became more adult, when they started to feel like they could let go of that story, of that public relations persona that they were projecting, that's when they started to feel a lot better about themselves.
The other thing I thought was interesting in the book is, you open the book and the first few chapters talk about the history of millennials, what they were like, the age brackets, the years that they were born, coming into their own. But then it slowly evolves into a whole different narrative, a very positive narrative, and that is that in spite of conflicts, in spite of obstacles, as a whole, that millennials are able to withstand any kind of criticism, any kind of obstacles. They're going to move forward, not just politically, not just business, but even you know, today, culture war is almost a daily occurrence. But I get the sense that based on the research that you did for the book, that as a generation, they've shrugged off all the negativity as much as possible. I mean, you know, there's only so much anybody can take. But the bottom line is that millennials are going to stand for something. So, you know, 100 years from now, if they write the history of the United States based on, you know, how we categorize generations, millennials will certainly have their place, right?
I think so. And I think one of the themes that really stood out to me, and I love your perspective too on this because you're from a different generation from me, but one of the themes and one of the stories that a lot of these individuals told about themselves is that they see themselves as kind of a bridge, because they remember life before the internet. They remember life after the internet. And they really kind of grew up between those phases. So they remember using, you know, the card catalog at the library. But then a few years later, they remember going on the internet at that very same library, maybe just the next year. And so that was a huge change. They remember September 11th, right? So I think that's one thing that's really important about millennials. Everyone would have been at least cognizant when that was happening. So they would have memories of before 9/11 and after. And that was a huge pivot point in American society that later generations, they don't remember the time before, right? And so even if you think about the political realm of the United States, even in the 1996 election, there were not red and blue states, or some television networks used red states for Democratic victories and blue states for Republican victories, right? So it was a different way of thinking and organizing. But this is something that a lot of these millennials talk about, is they remember the before and they remember the now, and they see themselves as a bridge between the two, which I think is a really positive thing.
I have to agree with you. I mean, that to have been told about something or said, you know, read your history book and you'll find out what it was like during the Civil War. We can never understand that fully. We can read all we want, and we can never understand what it was like you know, to live in the 1860s, shortly after the Civil War. But as you said, millennials at least had that opportunity to have a little bit of the past. And then obviously, you know, the next bus came along and it was, you know, the future ride. But they can go back and forth and say, I do understand what you're talking about, you know, whether it's a parent or an employer or just an older person that says, you don't understand, you weren't there. Yeah, I was. I was younger. And yes, there was a lot of upheaval and many changes. But nonetheless, I do remember it. In the final few moments that we have, let me ask you, obviously, you have a very, by the time you finished the book, I'm sure you felt even better about being a millennial and in defense of millennials. But are you still, are you confident that as we as a nation, and there's certainly a lot of things that this country is going through right now and will continue to go through, not only this country, but globally, are you confident that millennials will indeed be the generation that will be able to get through all of this, and that we will see light at the end of the tunnel, and there'll be more positive than negative?
I do. I came away from writing this book, spending months and months writing about it, with a really optimistic outlook based on conversations, based on research, based on the numbers. And yes, there is a lot of uncertainty. Yes, there is a lot of chaos. But I think one of the things, one of the real through points I got from studying this cohort of people, this big group of people, was that millennials are really good at adapting to change, right? They do it from the card catalog to the computer. They do it from pre-9/11 to post, from a pre-recession economy to a post, from a pre-pandemic United States to a post-pandemic United States. You name it, they have been through an incredible amount of change at a really delicate moment in their life, which was forming families, becoming adults, forming careers. And I think it's kind of like going through a lot of those really important moments with sandbags on, where if you can ever take the sandbags off, you're really going to fly.
Yeah, yeah. But
you're running.
But the key word here is, in summing it all up, adaptability. And it sounds, and I believe that adaptability is utmost important, no matter where you are on the you know, on the age brackets or anything else. Adaptability is the one thing that will help you to succeed, because you won't be fighting it so hard. You'll be able to say, okay, I may not agree with you 100%, but I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to, you know, show you some new ways of doing what we did in the past. Quickly, in a few final moments that we have, what happened to millennials? The book is now widely available, but if people want to post questions or get more information about your work, how might they reach you?
Yeah, they can just go to my website, charlie-wells.com, or they can find the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Just type Charlie Wells Millennials, and it will come up.
And what happened to millennials is, and I say this every week, and people say, oh, you just say that because you had the guest on. No, the book is terrific. You all, whether it's your children, your nieces, your nephews, everybody knows somebody from a different generation. And indeed, we don't always agree on perspectives. But I think Charlie's book is enlightening in the fact that it gives people the opportunity to understand a different generation, so that when you do get the opportunity to sit down face to face, you can do so hopefully with a little bit of an open mind. And that's really what's key here. Charlie, again, thank you so much for joining me. Again, the book is terrific. It's a great read. Hopefully people go out and buy it. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give me a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.